You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 21st, 2014, and despite Kenny's best efforts, we stay out of harm's way.
Aww. Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alport.
My name is Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorous discussion about games. And this has got to be what? This is the fifth, sixth, seventh. This is our eighth time, maybe ninth time or more, talking about Telltale's The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
We are in season two, episode three, just came out. I believe it came out, what?
Last week, a couple days ago.
Yeah, not too long ago.
It was that sidebar before we get into it. They did this really sneaky thing where the week before they were like, we just released it. Oh, yeah. And by it, we mean the trailer.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I got my hopes up. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, I gotta go home. Not available. No, they do this every time. They don't let you know until the week it comes out. Bam. The Walking Dead. It's out tomorrow. Yeah. Go play it. And it's been a while, right? It's been 6 weeks, almost?
I feel like the last time we did this was maybe in February. I don't know. I'd have to see, but it was a long time ago.
It's been a while. They're busy people. They've got Borderlands to work on. They've got the Wolf.
Game of Thrones.
The Wolf Among Us.
Yeah. There's many, many terrible decision trees they're having to do right now.
Indeed. Yeah. So, like always, we're going to talk about the episode in a very specific way. A little bit at first in terms of the mechanics. We'll try to go actually generally a little bit broader, not get into too many of the story beats, but then pretty quickly, as necessary, we'll jump right into the storyline, talk about our decisions, how they went, so on and so forth.
Yep.
So getting right into it, mechanically speaking, not that much different this week. It's another season two. Yeah. Less action than normal, I would say.
And I think the action that was there was a bit more, it was a bit more fitting in terms of, it felt dangerous, but I didn't really get the mechanical sense that it was actually all that dangerous. Like, the scenes were tense, but it wasn't really challenging in terms of there's multiple targets and you need to press all these buttons. Like,
What I noticed, actually, and I actually really commend, is this season in particular, but they did this in the last season as well, is there will be scenes where you have to tap frantically on the A button.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how hard you tap, you'll never, quote-unquote, succeed. You'll never have it come all the way around and then knock the person off. But because you don't know whether or not you'll succeed,
you have to
push it frantically. And so the outcome is not that, oh, you may or may not have made a bad decision.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter if you tried or not. What they want you to do is be tired.
Yep.
They want you to physically feel exhausted so that when Clementine feels exhausted and somebody knocks the zombie out of the way, you feel a sense not only of like emotional relief for the stake that you have in this character, but physical relief.
Yep.
That's smart.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
I was having a conversation the other week about The Walking Dead with one of my coworkers, and they had mentioned they felt as though the first season of The Walking Dead makes you think that your decisions matter, but they really don't. Mm. And I think that's somewhat true in terms of how the storyline branches, it's not true at all in terms of like the meaning that you have from that. And I think if we can admit that scene, even though you don't really have the agency to actually win, and quote-unquote win in the scenario, it does create that physical tension.
Yeah.
That's one-on-one, and it's really good. That's fantastic.
It's like the best, the best QuickTime events. Like, both of us are pretty big, like, God of War commenders. God of War does this really well. In Metal Gear Solid 4, there's like a climactic battle where you're just like hammering on a button, but it feels like someone's life is hanging in the balance. And like, it's actually relatively scripted, but like, this is actually like one of the things that QuickTime events do really well.
Yeah.
Because you really don't know if it matters or not. It just, you have to believe in the moment.
Yeah.
You know?
It's kind of like, actual destiny in real world.
Yeah.
If that's the conversation you're interested in.
It doesn't even really matter, like, if you believe in destiny or not, because in the exact moment, it's reality then.
Yes.
You know, like, you don't have to worry about it. But I agree, too. And there was multiple of those sequences. And I did not... remember last time there was that swiping sequence that I had to do, like, 10 times in a row? All the swiping worked just fine this time.
Good.
I don't know why or how, but like...
Yeah, maybe they polished it a little more, made it less
They cut
sensitive.
Down on it.
Yeah, I mean, the swiping, two scenes?
Yeah, yeah. And other than that, I don't think there's too much new stuff. Not that I can think of, anyway.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I feel like they settled into a rhythm, basically. Like, we have the new stuff established, and from here on out, it's just going to be employing that stuff rather than introducing new stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Before we get into the story, though, just a general thought about this episode.
Yeah.
I think this is probably one of the best episodes they've done of all the series.
I was about to say, I think this is one of the best episodes, period, of The Walking Dead.
It's probably, I think it's easily within the top three.
Yeah.
I think the last episode of season one is the best episode.
Yep.
But this is really good.
Yeah.
This is really good.
Yeah.
So I would definitely implore everybody listening to go and play this latest episode. Another question for you. One of my coworkers refuses to play them episodically and instead wants to wait until all five come out and then he'll just mainline them.
Okay.
How do you feel about that? We've talked a little bit about the episodic nature of the series.
Yeah. I mean, I think they do a pretty good job. I guess it depends on why you want to do it. Like, if you're afraid that you might lose some of the details of the story for in the, like, you know, 2 months intervening each time, like, I could see that.
But I think he just wants more. Like, the moment it's over, he's just, more Walking Dead.
Instead of 5, 2, or 3 hour experience, you just want 1 12 to 15 hour experience or whatever. Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, I could see that, but there's, you know, I somewhat mainlined the first season and then caught up. But, you know, I do enjoy the break in between, because I think you could kind of start getting tired of the mechanics after a while. I don't think you get tired of the story, but I mean,
that's a good point.
You know, there's only so many tricks the game itself can do, whereas the story really carries most of the interest for me. But because of that, I do like having some time to think about it afterwards. And like,
yeah, that's been my big argument is I think that there's something to say. You know, at the end of every episode of The Walking Dead, I generally feel, like, really tense.
Yeah.
The end of this episode, I was, like, my mouth was covered by my hands.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, like, oh, my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
And to stew in that,
yeah.
to stew in the self-doubt that this series is so good at creating is just a great experience and unique experience from an episodic perspective. Yeah. You cannot get that if I can immediately go and find out, oh, what are the repercussions?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's a lot of those. I think the kind of internet water cooler culture is really into this idea right now. Like, you know, whether it's Game of Thrones or Walking Dead, like there's this, people are liking this idea of everyone having a relatively similar arc of their experience of it.
Yeah.
And it is kind of neat to read people's, you know, takes on it and think about what's going to happen in the interim. So I don't know. I like being part of the conversation, but you know, if you like to mainline it, then it's, I don't know, you have more willpower than I do.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could do it. Yeah. One thing that isn't necessarily story specific, but is like thematically important, is this episode kind of tackles a lot of what we've been talking about in terms of what is asked of children in the series. And also just broadly, like, we've mentioned this many, many times, you know, George specifically, but, like, video games tend to be super safe places for children.
Yep.
To the extent that games like GTA and Red Dead just don't even have kids in them.
Yeah.
Like kids are, like, if you're in a video game, being a kid is, like, the safest person you could possibly be. But in The Walking Dead, there it's like the one example of actual children in real situations, mostly dangerous situations.
And arguably in the most precarious situation.
Yeah.
Because there is no solid ground for Clementine.
Yep.
Or where there is, she has to earn that, like tooth and nail, you know? I mean, I hadn't thought about that perspective, especially in relation to the title of this episode, In Harm's Way, until you mentioned it right now. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you see statistics, right? Like, kids carry, I mean, maybe not so much in, you know, industrialized Western world, but kids carry a huge burden all over the world. And I think that idea of like, oh, games make these safe spaces for them. And then for this to say, actually, you know what? There's actually quite a bit of burden, and we put a burden on them, not just in terms of, oh, Clem, you need to go do this dangerous thing, but in terms of, like, the social landscape that they have to maneuver as a child.
Yeah. And it also, because they don't pull any punches, it's like, well, who knows what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, it was already the case in The Walking Dead Season 1 that, like, terrible things happen to kids, but it was kind of as a dramatic climax to things.
Yeah.
But this Walking Dead Season 2 routinely has bad things happen to Clem, and Sarah,
Sarah,
Sarah, and they don't die. They just have to keep going on. Yep. You know, so it's not like this dramatic point that they're making. It's like an ongoing reality of like the troubles that are visited upon these kids.
Yeah.
Which is even more dramatic because they're not, there's no release from death, you know, like there was. Yeah. Like, this is just, you're going to have to continue living and dealing with this stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Brutal.
Yeah. Which I mean, and again, who knows what they're going to do next? Because every time you think, ah, oh, nah, they'll never do yeah. this. Then they do it.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, literally, yeah. like, at least twice in this episode, I was yeah. like, oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah.
Doesn't go there. Yeah. Goes somewhere else.
Somewhere much worse.
Oh, gosh.
So shall we give the spoiler warning at this point?
Yeah, I think it's time. Spoiler warning yeah. for season 2, episode 3 of The Walking Dead, In Harm's Way, starting now.
Now. Right. So.
Let us begin in the beginning. Well, before we even begin, let me say this. And this is something that I really appreciate and I think is stronger now in season 2 of The Walking Dead than it's ever been. And that is, every single episode of this season in particular feels like it has a thesis,
mm-hmm.
explores that thoroughly, yeah. those themes thoroughly,
mm-hmm.
puts it to rest, and moves on.
Mm.
And I think this episode was really strong in its theme. It consistently hit on the two issues that I really felt were gender and like a family,
mm-hmm.
and the sort of the way that people relate to one another, mm. in a way that is just, I think, absolutely phenomenal.
Mm. Let's see. Well, I'm trying to figure out where we should start, but I kind of intrigued that those themes. So the family stuff was around like Sarah, her dad.
Well, yeah, Sarah, her dad. I think it was around Rebecca, mm-hmm. the pregnant woman
yeah.
in the episode. It's around Clementine.
Carver looks at the settlement that he's created yep. as his family.
Yeah. Carver, Bonnie, Luke's mantra from the yeah. last episode of the thing that matters most is family
yeah.
is completely undercut in this episode.
Yeah.
Because family, and this is a really interesting theme that I've talked about in past episodes and in past writings. The idea of family in video games in particular is super interesting.
Mm.
And the idea that in an extreme scenario, in the future, in The Walking Dead, and this is especially true in The Last of Us, mm-hmm. right? Is certain notions of family are in fact very dangerous
mm.
when pushed to extremes.
Yeah,
you know, like there are so many natural things that might fall out of what would be the social norm, right? Mm. Clem can act like a child in certain scenarios if she wants to,
mm-hmm.
but if she does. That comes at a great cost
yeah.
in this world. And I think that's true of anything. Like, to be a father in this world comes at a huge cost.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, there's a scene where Carlos has to slap Sarah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Carver's going to have somebody else do it brutally.
Yeah.
Right? And he doesn't want to do it. But at the same time, after he does it, they mention, like, oh, the guy who was going to hit her was like, wow, even that was rough
yeah.
for me. And Sarah questions, like, oh, did he have to hit me so hard?
Yeah.
And I think the game wants you to think, maybe Carlos hit her actually harder than even Carver was asking him to.
Yeah.
And, you know, and maybe the reason he was doing that was to punish her even more. And now that means to be a father in this scenario is actually not, in fact, play a fatherly role,
yeah.
but play the role of an abuser to make someone, like, look, I tried to keep you safe from this, and now I have to push you to such an extreme because it's the only way I'm going to save your life.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. And that's just one aspect of, the family drama that goes on in this episode.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's getting to that point. That was when we last left.
Yeah, when we last left.
They had gotten messed up by Carver, and
yes.
and you know they get thrown in the back of a truck and taken back to this home improvement store. This kind of really light takeoff on Lowe's house. I thought that was actually pretty funny because there were some advertisements that were like, "How's that for you?" Like, and I was like,
"That's pretty good."
Someone who thought that up was really clever.
Lowe's prices.
Yeah. And they bring him back to, by the way, one of the preferred, zombie survival techniques is barricade yourself in a huge
department
Walmart or Home Depot like store. Carver is smart, man. And then, you know, they take them back in a truck, and there's a pretty tense scene when they're in the truck trying to decide whether or not they're going to escape or whether they're going to reassimilate, you know, back
yes.
into the,
yeah.
to the, you know, to Carverland or wherever they're
going. Carverland!
Yeah,
like, Vacation Wonderland!
Yeah, it's like, you'll never leave. I think our parties may have been similar at this point. Obviously, me, I didn't have, what is the guy who was the friend of Walt earlier, because he had killed the boyfriend of, maybe that was Walt, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy died in my game, so he wasn't around. Yeah,
he died
around.
In mine as well. Oh, okay. I think he always dies.
Okay, okay. So it's, you have this setup of, like, everyone has been, has experienced or lived in Carverland except for...
Carverland, that's great.
Except for Kenny, Sarita, his wife, and Clem. And so there's this, like, split between the group of, like, what you want
to
do.
Yeah, they sort of, it's not, you know, they're not going over to his side, yeah. But they realize, you know, resistance is futile. Yeah. We're just going to have to join the Borg and yeah. Be done with it.
That's like one of the first opportunities where you really take over Clem again, and she has the option of, like, either trying to calm Kenny down or going with him. Like, what was your response to Kenny at this point?
Yeah, so, you know, when last we played this game, my reaction with Kenny was a sort of sad realization that my presence there was actually just making things worse for Kenny.
Yeah.
But... in this episode, I actually was on his side for the most part. I tried to calm him down a little bit because there's a, you know, his irrationality has gotten people in trouble in the past.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want this to go off like a rocket. But at the same time, the level of complacency on the others is just astonishing. And even if I say, yes, Kenny, like, I'll back you up. I know, like, I'm a little girl. I don't know.
Right.
They're probably not going to kill us all. Let's see what happens. Yeah, let's back him up.
So you were backing Kenny.
I was backing Kenny, yeah.
Yeah, I was similarly, maybe a little bit more guarded because, like, honestly, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But it was, from Clementine's perspective, like, I thought one of my favorite things about this this episode was kind of the almost, like, Batman-Joker type relationship between Carver and Clementine.
Yes.
Like, you and I are the same, you know, we're the same. Because, like, at this point, Clem... actually is a survivor in a way that the other people from the town aren't. You know, they, like, immediately kind of go and try to keep their heads down. And, like, Clem knows that that can only take you so far. You know, she's already been in a bunch of situations like this.
Yep.
And so she is a survivor, and so it doesn't really seem right that she would continue to do this. I mean, I'm playing her pretty quiet. Like, there's still plenty of times where I'm just silent in this game.
Yep. There's some really... beautiful moments of silence, too, if you choose that route.
They really write it as silence, too. It's not just the absence of a choice. It's like the choice is being quiet, and there's no hinky dialogue that seems like they should be saying something when they really aren't. Yeah, it's pretty good. So, I mean, all that stuff happens. It actually doesn't amount to anything because Kenny hits his head. And like
classic Kenny.
Classic Kenny. He hits his head and can't fight back. But they put you to work in this... this colony that they've created.
Yeah. And it's almost like a forced labor camp if you want to be the in-group.
Exactly, yeah. You have to prove yourself, and if you don't prove yourself, then you get progressively more dangerous jobs. You know, you're sent out to the wall to, you know, barricade, you know, against the zombie attacks or whatever. You meet Reggie?
Reggie
is his Anglophone name. I forget what his, you know, given name was. Kenny makes a pretty funny comment about that. Like, how did you... He's an Indian guy. He's like, how did you get the name Reggie? And they're like, Kenny,
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
At first, I really disliked Reggie.
Because
I didn't like his dialogue. Mm-hmm. And then I actually realized they actually give him some of the best dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, there's this great moment when... in the beginning, he's trying to be nice to Clementine. And my Clementine... was, like, mean and sort of brisk with him.
Mm.
And then somebody else, that guy gets mad. I forget his name, but there's a guy who gets mad because we're talking while he was sleeping.
Yeah.
And my Clementine apologizes. And Reggie's like, you apologize to him, but not me? What's the deal?
he's there's a lot of comic relief for him. In kind of a sad way, too, because this is a guy who helped the original survivors escape, but he got left behind, and then he got attacked by a walker, and they had to remove his arm.
That's right.
And then he's been in this kind of in the out group since then, because he was being punished for letting the people escape.
Yeah, there's a dialogue option when Kenny is talking about Reggie and asking whether or not you know, Clementine trusts him.
Yeah.
And Clementine, I think, has a really astute description of him, which is just that he's scared.
Yep.
And that's totally true. Unfortunately, his fear makes him also a coward and sort of seals his fate.
Yeah. You know, he's trying desperately to just survive, which means trying to get back into the in-group, you know, doing what Carver says. And that's actually one of the biggest juncture point, or one of the first big choices that they measure you on anyway. You are sent to help him, you know, with your day laboring.
Yeah, pruning, you know, some leaves.
You and Sarah are in there, and, you know, Kenny's, Reggie's job is to go through the greenhouse and, you know, harvest, basically. And you're supposed to help him do that because there's a deadline. Classic bosses.
Yep.
And Sarah's doing a bad job, and you have this...
Fucking Sarah,
yeah,
man.
Sarah. Like, jeez. She's the new... She's the new...
Doug?
No, Duck was...
Ben.
Yes, she's the new Ben. Like, yep. She's doing a bad job because, you know, she's pretty, you know, understandably broken up because she's been abused by her father, who Carver was forcing to abuse her.
Yes.
And you choose whether to just do your own job or help her. So what did you do?
I helped her. Did you know? I know what happened between you and Ben. So I presumed you didn't help her.
Well, according to the stats, me and 21% of other people just did their own work.
That's because you and 21% are assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened then that you helped her? Like,
well, so they give you an option when he confronts her. He's like, oh, Clementine, you didn't do any of your work.
Okay.
And Clementine has an option of basically saying...
Reggie confronts or Carver?
Carver confronts. Okay. Yeah. And Clementine has an option of saying, oh, well, I was teaching, you know, this Sarah, she didn't know how to do it. You can blame Reggie as like, oh, he didn't teach us well.
Right.
Or you could just take blame upon yourself and say, you know, I didn't, you know, I failed to do it, or I didn't know, or it's all my fault.
Yeah.
Which is what I did. I mean, I think at this point...
Clem took his mind.
I mean, I think at this point, at least my version of Clementine is coming to the realization that, like, she has to be the one to take blame, because she partly realizes that what people don't expect of her. Like, they know she's been through this shit. Mm-hmm. She used to be a little girl, too.
Yeah.
Like, it used to suck for her. You think she used to be able to prune things perfectly,
right,
and handle every scary thing, right? We know. We've been with Clementine when she tried to shoot a zombie and then just failed, and Lee had to get them out of the situation, right?
Yeah.
And did he blame her? Did he accuse her of anything? No, of course not, right?
Mm-hmm.
She had to come to this point where she was strong. And so I've been playing her in a way that's like, look, Sarah might have the opportunity to be strong too, but she's not going to do it with a father figure like Carver. So in some ways, Clem, and again, this goes back to, in my mind, like a lot of the themes about family and Denner in this episode, Clementine has to be the one to step up and actually teach her and give her a level of respect,
right,
in a way that's not, you know, it's not coddling her. Every time I had an opportunity to tell her to shut up, which is twice, I told her to shut up. And she kept opening her mouth at terrible times.
Yeah.
And I think that approach to her made sense in my thinking of Clementine as someone who needs to usher Sarah into, you know, this world as though she didn't realize she was in a fucked up post-apocalyptic hellscape.
Yeah, I don't get, maybe they'll explore this more, but I'm still not completely understanding why Sarah doesn't get it.
I mean, I think part of it is she's just dumb. But, we know from the last episode, or the episode before that, that Carlos has been...
Really sheltering
her, not letting her leave the house.
Yeah.
She doesn't go on, like, journeys. She's never learned how to fire a gun.
Right.
Like, he was trying to give her a normal childhood. You know, and that's just the result, right? At one point in the episode, Carver's lecturing. He's giving this great monologue.
Yeah.
By the way, the voice actor of Carver...
It's Michael Madsen.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
He does really good.
He's a goddamn actor.
He puts on this voice that at first I thought was like, oh, this isn't going to work for me.
Yeah.
But, man, he can hold a scene.
Yeah.
He's lecturing and delivering a monologue to Clementine about, you know, his kids are going to be raised the right way.
Yeah.
And there's an aspect of that that makes sense. You know, Sarah's not raised the right way, and he admires Clem for being raised, you know, quote unquote, the right way.
Mm.
And man, like, you're in a shitty position, but you have to see the logic in that.
Yeah. Well, that's why I really like their relationship, and it's also their, because they are both survivors.
Yeah.
But they chose the divergent path, you know, and it makes it even nicer because they're so juxtaposed.
Yeah.
You know, Carver's this kind of, kind of leatherneck, you know, old tough white guy. Clementine, mixed race, young, you know, pre-teen or tween, like, just the physical juxtaposition makes it more powerful that if you peel back that a little bit, they've gotten to where they are because they are both survivors, you know?
So we're jumping a little ahead, but in that scene when him and Clementine are having the conversation and he mentions that, oh, they're one and the same. How did you respond to that? Did Clementine say, yeah, like you and I were...
I think I just stared at him most of the time. But when he mentioned, when he started talking about his children, I was like, how do you know it's your kid?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And he actually like paused there for a minute. He's like, well, it's mine now, you know, sort of thing. Which I thought it was just a really good interaction between the two of them.
Yeah. That's actually, I mean, going back to the issue of like gender and family and stuff, this episode in particular and Carver as this like symbol of masculinity in this like modern era is super interesting. Yeah. Like the way that he tells Carver to hit his kid. Yeah. Is a very much like machismo, you know, stern father figure. He sees himself as a father. And in that scene to say like, well, it's mine now.
Yeah.
Is applying such like a dominance over Rebecca. Not only in that he physically kidnapped her, but it doesn't even matter if it's his kid anymore. Well, it's his kid. It's also kid out
of
like
desperation too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it comes out of a place of weakness because if he admits it, that it's not his, then his society, which is basically based on his own power over everyone in it, will just crumble beneath him.
I think there's a great difference between Clementine and Carver. And I had Clementine say like, we're nothing alike, which isn't true. They are alike,
right?
But
she wouldn't want to admit it. But like, that's the thing.
But the sense is, I get that what fuels Carver's survival mentality is this like hyper masculinity that he's taken on of like, I have to be this stern, abusive father that dominates women.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's. And several people say this, it's, you can't argue that he's been able to survive. They're like, well, he can't argue with the results. Look at all of the food we have. Like, we've survived this long. And so it's like, he's chosen the path that kind of, the survival path that Lee warned Clementine away from.
Yeah.
You know?
Because, I mean, and again, in the long run, yes, they survived, but, you know, look at where they're at now. Like, this is what...
It will crumble.
Yeah. And you know, if you build, again, in terms of this thesis, I think one of the main theses of this episode is that if you build your strength on masculinity, you are setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
You know, so much of that is just hammered home.
Yeah. So going back to some of the choices, at a certain point, you realize that that Luke has survived the initial attack.
Good old Luke.
Yeah, and he snuck into the...
Did you hug him out of curiosity?
No.
Okay. Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. He looked kind of weird. Like, he looked all pale and gross, and I was like, ooh. And he was acting kind of twitchy, and I was like, maybe he got bit, and he
ooh,
bit. And this is his, he's trying to save us before he succumbs.
This is fever dream.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, he asks you to, you know, start setting the stage for an escape, but you have the choice to tell Bonnie that Luke is around.
Yep.
And Bonnie is actually trying to endear herself to Clem throughout the episode.
Yeah.
That's a
dangerous path to walk, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I knew, like, Clem didn't really know anything about Bonnie except that she had betrayed them as, an advanced scout for Carver.
There's a great moment where she says, you know, she says, I'm not going to lie to you anymore.
Yeah.
And Clem has the option of saying, well, like, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
Which is just a lovely moment of, like, complete honesty of, like, look, you lied to us.
Did you do the same thing? Like, it was, because I had no reason to really have Clem trust her, like, why, you know?
Yeah,
she's just looking for a mother figure, like, I don't know. Like,
well, I mean, so that's exactly it, right? Like, I was so, you know, there's so many moments where Bonnie gives Clementine this really great symbol of childhood, which is
like a rainbow jacket,
puffy rainbow jacket with the clock on it, which I think is, god, this episode is so good, because later in the episode we see Clementine covering with blood, right? Which is just like, I am, you know, this childhood thing.
Yeah, smearing the childhood.
We cannot have this, you know? And so when Bonnie gives it to her, I made a point of avoiding putting Clementine in a position where someone would see her as a daughter.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't want to be with Kenny at the end of the last episode. I did not want to put her in a position where he's going to see her as a daughter.
Yeah.
And what you see constantly in this episode is people want the best of both worlds.
Right.
They want Clementine to be this helpless little girl that they can coddle and care for, and they want to have her be this adventurer, spunky go-getter who will save their fucking lives.
Right.
And it's fucking incredibly selfish on everyone's part.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's tempting, right?
Yeah.
But, like, there's no reason for, like, she didn't come this far to take those types of chances. But it's still intriguing to see Bonnie try so hard and also start to realize that the lie that she's been telling herself about what type of guy Carver is finally starting to unravel for her.
Yeah, yeah. And I really like Bonnie. And a lot of this episode for me, or at least with Bonnie's reaction, was weighted by the way that, you know, both of us really liked Bonnie's story from the last episode. Which, by the way, makes me wonder if they felt she also had the strongest arc.
Right.
Because I feel like they wrote... Yeah, they wrote... Yeah. This episode in particular feels as though they wrote this Bonnie in mind with almost the same way that I interpreted her character in the last one.
Yeah.
Which is like she sort of fell into this pattern again and she's recognizing what she's doing, which is, you know, adhering again to this sort of world defined by this masculinity and
like
and
addictive past and stuff. She's like finally like getting out of it.
So to see her break that mold again, like I thought it was great. I thought Bonnie was fantastic in this episode.
But I mean, the plan continues anyway.
Yes.
You know, the idea is to steal a couple walkie talkies so they can communicate with Luke. And then
you did not choose Kenny's path. You said both.
I said both because, but I mean, that's just the pure logical way. Because like, exactly. I mean, like you need a distraction, and there's no better distraction than walkers. So it's like you need something.
Lurkers.
So like, you need that, and so even if I were to side with one or the other, it just feels like you need both of those. So that's kind of where I went with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's a kind of an intriguing sequence that I actually realized that I may have been able to play out differently when you're trying to steal the walkie-talkies.
Mm-hmm.
I stole them okay, but I think you could also go in and confront Carver at that point, potentially. Like, did you see that other skylight that was there?
I did. I went and looked at it, but all you can do is just look at him.
Oh, okay. You can't open it. You can't go in there?
No.
Okay. That would have been a weird branch, but...
Yeah, that would have been.
I mean, just seeing that, it's like, what is Clementine going to do? This guy has a gun.
Yeah.
So I stole it, but then, you know, inevitably Luke gets found out because he hasn't slept for, you know, 72 hours or whatever. And, he got hungry, he said, so he decided to, you know, and so he gets caught, and then, you know, you have to try to, you have to determine whether or not you're going to admit that you stole the walkie-talkies.
Yep.
That was a really vague choice for me, like, I didn't really know what was happening at that point.
Yeah.
The game tells me that me and 55% of other people tried to hide the theft. Or admitted to stealing the walkie-talkie rather than someone else.
Yeah.
But Kenny took the blame, ultimately.
Yeah. Oh, so you denied it. You were like, oh, I don't know where the walkie-talkie is.
I don't know what... Like I said, this choice happened really, really fast. Yeah. And I think Clem was about to say something. Well, here's what actually happened. Clem was about to say something, and then right when she started talking, Kenny was like, oh, no, here it goes. Yeah.
So... Yeah, but I guess the difference is what you intended to have Clem say, right?
Okay.
So, you know, I had intended her to step and say, oh, yeah, I took it. Yeah. I have it as right here.
Right.
And he stole it, which I thought was really, you know, I've started to distrust Kenny a little bit in this episode
because
he doesn't generally, like this I thought was actually a little alien to what I would expect of him. And I thought it was good. I think that's kind of an arc. You know, he is also a survivor. I guess he knows and cares for Clementine, but to see somebody do what Clementine, at least my version, was literally about to do herself, which is take the blame, I thought it was really cool.
They had that, stepping back for a moment, they had that sequence where Kenny didn't realize that Clem was awake and they were sleeping, and Kenny was telling his wife, like, oh, he was thinking about Duck a lot recently. And,
oh, God, that's brutal scene.
And so, I mean, there's kind of this realization that that's where his mind is at, and he might be in the mindset of trying to protect people and, like, trying to do the right thing.
That's a good point. Actually, I want to go back to that scene as well, because there's a moment that is one of my favorites of this episode. And Clementine goes, and she gets the walkie-talkie in the first place, and it's super dangerous, and they've asked her to do this, and it's, again, another one of those scenarios where they want the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes back, and Jane, I think it's Jane, the blonde, asks her, like, how did it go?
Right.
And she has an option of saying, like, I was really scared. And it chose not to say anything.
Yeah.
But that moment, like, all three options fall in a sort of realm in which Clementine is almost admitting that she wishes she could be a child, like she wants to partake in that. And I know that some people certainly chose to say, oh, I was really scared.
Yeah.
But for me, the answer of taking it stoically was this putting Clementine in just this really shitty position where she almost does not have the luxury to admit that she kind of wishes she was more like Sarah. Like she kind of wishes she could be a kid.
Yeah.
And she just can't. It's just not the way. And she doesn't want to be somebody else's child. She doesn't want to be treated like a child because she knows the repercussions of that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, she doesn't fully want to embrace this thing where she's being used all the time.
Because that's what, like, every single time it's like, okay, well, someone has to jump up on the roof, climb into the thing. And then, like, they all look at Clementine. It's like, okay, great.
Yeah, and she gets the option of saying, like, why does it always have to be me?
Yeah.
Which I didn't say, but the fact that it's there makes me think that she's thinking that no matter what choice you make, you know, like, it's such...
Yeah.
It sucks, man. Like, Clem cannot get a break. And this episode, with that theme in particular, was just putting her in so many terrible positions.
If I recall correctly, in that situation, I just said something that could have been, like, viewed as, like, equally sarcastic of, like...
Let's do this.
It's like, I think I even said, like, I'll need a boost.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, that's what, like, it's like, well, duh, you're going to ask me to do this anyway. The least you could do is give me a boost.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Awesome, man.
So the next big decision point is, well, okay, so Carver
beats the almost hell to death.
Out of Kenny.
He loses sight in one eye.
Yeah.
And it's brutal.
You know, and then after he punishes Kenny, there's this idea of, okay, well, are we going to scrap the plan now, or are we going to keep on going? And there's a conversation with Luke, who's even saying, you know, they're all sitting around a fire trying to figure out what to do, and they're like, well, we need to start talking about who we may need to leave behind.
Yep. Fucking assholes.
Yeah, it's like,
assholes.
But I mean, you know, realistically, right? Like, it's going to come to something like that.
Here's my problem with this group in particular, right? Is that just like the way that they want the best of both worlds with Clem, they want it with everything. They don't want to make the sacrifice if it's themselves.
Right.
But the moment it's easy for them, the moment they can remove themselves in any way, they've got no problems with it.
Right.
It's such, like, there's so much hypocrisy in that group.
Well, and I also think that there's just maybe a lack of cohesion or a lack of recognizing that even if Kenny's a loose cannon, you still need another body in order to do this. Like, the rest of these people are not that competent.
Yep.
And so that's what Clementine was in my game. You know, I had her say, like, we have to keep everyone together. You know, we can't leave anyone behind, but you do have the option of saying, like, are you saying leave Kenny behind, or like, you know, maybe we should, but ultimately Kenny is able to recover enough to, like, you know, traumatic brain damage. That's fine. But you know, it was that moment, even though I think it's fairly tightly scripted, I thought that could be the end. Like, I thought, okay, well, we'll leave Kenny here and maybe we'll see him in season 3. Like, who knows? Yeah. Like, maybe this could be it. But like, there's a very, there's a sense that that could be real at that point.
Yeah.
Like, you could be leaving him behind. But it, you know, in any case, you put the plan into play. You start with the walkie talkies, you turn up the store speaker system so loud and point the speakers out so that the walkers are the swarm.
And start swarming. Yeah.
What do they call them? The herd. Yeah.
Yeah, the herd. We also see, I forget Rebecca's husband's name, but he's been brutally tortured.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was dead.
I thought so too. I kept backing out of committing the option because I wanted to check up.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to miss an opportunity to make sure he was okay.
I mean, I was just afraid that he was going to turn while I was in that room.
Oh, that's a very...
That guy's huge.
Like, yeah, he's big.
And Clem is in there in a locked room by herself, you know, and I thought when I saw him there and he wasn't responding, I was like, well, I better start doing this fast because I'm going to have a 6-foot zombie on my hands in like a few minutes. But you end up doing that. He makes a pretty heroic last stand of, you know, preventing the people from getting to Clementine.
Yep. But, I'm going to add another, like, I think this is an intentional... another point for the masculinity theme is Carver's gun is really small.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he makes a funny joke about it, but, you know, I think...
It's kind of some Freudian...
Freudian things going on here where it's like he's built up this mask of masculinity to fuel his survivalism.
Yeah.
But, in fact, it's built on just a facade.
Yeah.
Which I thought was nice.
And, you know, it's... He... you know, he's able to protect Clementine at the very end, which is, like, kind of his redeeming quality. Because he's always been a little bit, you know, back and forth. He was always nice to Clementine, but maybe wasn't particularly good at standing up for her. But finally, you know, he does his final stand.
Well, and he knows, like, he's not going to make it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you do make it. The plan's actually going fairly well. But
then you come through the skylight.
Through the skylight and you see Carver has everyone hostage yet again. It's this classic trick. But as Clem, you're able to pull your best impersonation of Ezio and like jump on top of him.
If only she had hand blades. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you're able to distract Carver enough so that you can overpower him. And at that point,
oh my god,
with you know scene, echoes yeah. of echoes of Michael Madsen's previous role in Reservoir Dogs,
yeah,
Kenny has a few words to say with him, and you have this big choice. You know Kenny is just gonna brutally murder this person out of both revenge and justice, I guess.
Yeah, there's this great moment actually right about when this happens where they're asking everybody, like, what do we do?
Yeah.
And there's a moment where they sort of ask Clem.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say anything?
I was going to... I thought we could use him as a hostage.
Mm.
So I said, let's tie him up.
Okay.
And that got shouted down for some reason or another. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
know why. Like, I had this great moment where, again, it's another moment of hypocrisy. It's another moment of them wanting the best of both worlds, of wanting Clem to be this, like... feminine child idol, yet the strong saving archetype. So I just didn't say a fucking thing. I was like, fuck you people. Like, I'm not going to be the one that
I'm not going to make this choice.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to make this choice. Yeah. And again, she does have to make a brutal choice in this scene, but the idea of The Walking Dead, which is all about making choices, to give the give meaning to not making a choice is so cool.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. But when you don't do that, when you don't make a choice, are you still faced with the ultimate decision of whether to stay or go?
Yeah, so ultimately, Kenny says, like, everybody get out of here.
Yeah,
and you know, you sort of grok, like, what
he's going to do. Yeah, Carver's not leaving.
Carver's not leaving, and it's not a gun in his hand. It's a crowbar. And Clementine says, or at least my Clementine said, you don't have to do this. I didn't want him to do this. Right? I said, like, don't do this. And then she has to make the decision whether or not to stay, because... no matter what she says, Kenny's going to go through with this.
Yeah.
Did you stay?
Oh, I stayed.
Oh, I stayed as well. Yeah. So what is your, like, what is your Clementine rationale for staying?
I mean, apparently, like, 70%+ of other people also stayed. So there's two. One was on a meta level. I wanted to see how far Telltale was willing to go with this.
Oh, God, they are willing to go very far.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're willing to have, you know, whatever Clementine watch as Carver's face is turned into... literally a bloody pulp.
It's easily one of the most...
Speaking of God of War shit, like, that's... Yeah. Like,
it's easily one of the most violent scenes in the entire series.
Yeah. But the in-game rationale for me was that Clem was much closer to Carver than she was willing to admit.
Interesting.
And this was one of the things where she needed to make sure that this guy didn't come back.
Oh, man. You know? Yeah. Like, God, like, you're, it's funny. Like, your rationalization is so different than mine.
Yeah.
my approach was like, okay, she says don't do this, Kenny, but he's going to do it anyway.
Maybe you could stop him or maybe...
No, like, it wasn't about... Yeah. It was about, like... It's a weird... I don't know. Maybe this is not the normal rationalization that other people had, but my rationalization was that she played a pivotal part in the decisions that led to this.
Mm-hmm.
And to not stay, even if you're against it...
Yeah, right? To see, like, it through.
To not see it through is... itself a form of denying your role in what happens.
Yeah.
You know, it almost felt like a sort of Eddard Stark moment, right? Yeah. Where, like, okay, you don't want to do this. Yeah. She doesn't want him to do this, but it's happening.
Right.
And you need to accept it.
If it's happening, if you condemn someone, you're the one that has to swing the sword.
And it was the most, you know, in the first season, we have this arc where Clem becomes an adult and goes to a sort of coming of age experience with the help of Lee. And I think this was a moment where she made the decision herself to really, like, do that transition again, to have another coming of age moment where she realizes, not only am I, like, an adult now and my decisions matter, but, like, my decisions can lead to these horrifying ends.
Right.
And to have that realization and, I mean, even sort of tragically say goodbye to that concept that she ever could be a kid.
Right.
Right. Like, she had to do it. And it was...
Yeah.
God, that was brutal.
That was rough.
I could not believe that they went through that.
Well, the other thing to me, and the other thing for my game specifically, is that at the end of season one, Clem left Lee to an unknown fate. Like, I didn't...
Oh, Clem, God, that's so funny. Yeah, like, that's not what...
Yeah.
Because she's killed Lee in my version.
In my version, Clem left.
Yeah.
And, like, at that point, it's like, that is a defining thing for Clem that she has to live with, like... with certainty, she doesn't really know what happened to Lee. And so at this point, there is a premium placed on certainty for her.
Yeah.
Like, she made this mistake a long time ago of not seeing something through, like, one way or the other. And so going forward, you have to see it through because you need to know what happened to this person.
I love the fact that your a difference that you made like in the first
five episodes ago,
at least a year, right? Yeah. A year in real time, is like pivotal to understanding the scene now.
Yeah, yeah, it was like one of the informing factors because like Clem can't. You can only live with so much uncertainty, especially in this world. Oh, and, like, that's not a piece of uncertainty that she wants to relive, even though it's a bad person rather than a good person this time around.
Damn.
And, of course, you know, that I thought that was, like, the pivotal moment in the episode. But then you try to get out there. You do that really good scene that you mentioned around coating yourself with entrails to get through the swarm without getting attacked.
And playing the role that Lee played in the first season of covering Sarah.
A lot of good cyclical stuff of like now Clem is in that role.
And again, like just to recap on more gender stuff, right? Yeah. Like it's Clementine who does this, not Carver, her dad. Carver ends up helping out, but like Clementine initiates that, which is important.
Yeah.
Two, Jane shoots a dude in the dick.
Yeah.
Like, totally shoots him in the dick. Yeah. It's funny, because right before that moment, I was like, man, like, gender's a really big issue for here. And then she shoots him in the dick.
Yeah.
From what I presume is some past relationship of maybe, well, like, sexual abuse.
Well, and also, like, she was the one, like, I don't mean this in, like, you know, she was, like, leading him on, like, using him, his attraction to her as a tool to kind of, like, save herself and, like, get preferential treatment and stuff. Yeah. So it's like, you know, she was never, I never got the sense that she was actually going to escape with that guy.
No, not at all. It felt like she was doing this to keep herself safe from him.
Exactly.
In fact.
Yeah.
And like, that is just a whole nother like issue of this masculinity playing a role in like even creating terrible scenes here. And I also loved the fact that, before, Rebecca's husband dies, he tells Clementine that he thinks it's going to be a girl.
Oh yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Cause again, like, Clementine goes through all of this. We see Carver saying, oh, I would raise my daughter a certain way. And for him to see, like, oh, I think it's going to be a girl this time, is just this crazy icing on of, like, a fucked up gender world cake. Because, you know, so much of it is like, well, what is this? What does that even mean now?
Right.
Like, oh, she's a girl. That's meaningless in this world now.
Yeah.
Because anytime you put meaning in this extreme environment, like, those social structures sort of necessarily crumble and create really unsafe foundations for, like, working together.
Yeah. So the cherry on that cake
is... The cherry on the cake was shooting the guy in the dick, I think.
But then, so the epilogue, the after-dinner mint...
Oh, yes, the after-dinner
Was Sarah freaks out in the zombie horde.
Fucking Sarah.
Sarah, man.
I
told her to shut up during the thing, too.
I didn't react in time. Mm-hmm. I was, like, about to tell her to shut up, and it was not enough.
It was a very, very quick... I don't know, now that you bring that up, I don't know if I successfully hit the button prompt or just... attempted to do it like you did, because it's another one of those great little mechanical moments where the decision space is like a second and then it's gone. Sarah freaks out, all hell breaks loose because now the zombies realize that there are
non-zombies in their midst,
sheep among the wolves, so to speak, and so like you know, shit goes crazy. Sarah wanders off somewhere.
Yeah, she runs off into the woods. Yeah. Well, she sees her dad, Carlos.
Right.
He's dead. And he just gets bitten by a zombie and torn apart.
And then the climactic moment, you see Sarita, Kenny's wife, actively being gnawed on by a zombie.
On the hand.
On the hand. Yeah. And Clem just so happens to be holding her trusty hatchet. And you have a big choice to make.
Yes, you have a big choice to make. Chop her arm off or kill the zombie and let her be bitten.
Yeah. What did you do?
I fucking chopped that arm off so fast.
Oh, yeah, me too. And so did other 80% of the other people
that
played.
But
yeah.
That scene is so well shot and choreographed. Like, it's slow-mo, right?
Yeah.
So you have a moment to like...
You have plenty of time to think about it.
Like,
yeah.
She's gonna die.
Yeah.
She's infected. But like, I have to make a decision. That decision has to be made right now.
Yeah. And they slow it down enough so that you can think about the fallout.
Yes.
Because like I started thinking about like, okay, if I do chop her arm off, what the hell is Kenny gonna do?
Yeah.
It's like it's really like one of those times, I don't know if anyone's ever had this experience, but if you're ever in a dangerous situation or if you're in like a car crash or if you fall or something, like the world does seem to slow down a little bit. And like you start to think through the ramifications where it's like, maybe I should just kill the zombie and let her die and say, oh, I tried my best and like I didn't, and because who knows what Kenny will react
to now.
And, like,
maybe she's doomed anyway, right?
Yeah,
like
maybe. Who knows?
Or both of our leads tried to chop their arm off.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like,
mine didn't, actually. Mine didn't chop his arm off.
Well, Well, I mean, but other people did. Like, we tried to do it, you know.
Well, and we know that Reggie survived, yeah.
And so it's like, okay, but... And then, like, the secondary, like, oh, well, if I do chop her arm off, maybe she'll just bleed to death. Like, who knows? Yeah. Like, what will happen?
Or maybe she'll bring more of the Horde over. Like, yeah. She screams when it happens.
Not only that, she is, like, spouting fresh blood now, which is, like...
Well, and there's this, like... They're so smart, too, right? Yeah. The first... She doesn't chop it off cleanly.
No.
So you first hit, and then at that point, you're like, I fucking can't believe this is happening right now. But you've already committed.
You've committed. You have to keep going.
And you chop it off, like, that scene... And again, and then she just lets out a blood-curdling scream. Screen goes black.
Yeah.
I literally was like, my hands were covering my mouth. I'm totally alone in the house, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, what is going to happen? Like, shit is so... fucked right now. Like that dude shot a guy in the dick. That was crazy. Sarah's gone in the woods. I don't know what's happening with Kenny. Like, we have to get the hell out of here. Blood curdling scream.
It's just a great episode. Like, it's just a great, like, video game moment, you know, like those 3 hours or whatever. Like, it's just so strong. Like, it doesn't lose momentum, and it ends at a place where It's definitely the height of the action, but it sets the stage for so much more fallout that's going to happen in the subsequent episodes. Like, it was just a very, very strong episode.
At the beginning of the episode, when we first meeting Reggie, I was like, you know what? I don't think this episode's going to be very good because, you know, I didn't find Reggie particularly compelling at first. I thought it was weird we'd be in this new environment. And then, you know, as always, they sort of break your expectations, right? Like, you think a plan's going to work out and it doesn't. You think Luke's going to come and save everybody. Well, he kind of needs more saving than the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, and they hit those themes of, like, masculinity and family and, like, the obligations that people have to one another over and over so well. We see Becca and Chell from 400 Days as well. So, like, you know, there's all sorts of issues that we already know.
And I think the lady who you stole the walkie-talkies, was in 400 Days, too. So you kind of know what the survivors from 400 Days did. Like, they joined these people.
There's this... They play around... I feel like at this point, Telltale is so aware of how others think or can think about these characters in multiple branches ways, right? Like, what you did with Lee in Season 1 and the way it affects Clementine now, and what I did with Lee in Season 1 and the way it affects Clementine now, and the relationships between Clem and Kenny are very different. And they have to consider all the many different ways that they can interact.
Yeah.
And I'm almost certain that they think about the different ways, probably because a lot of people on their team play differently themselves and now are sort of dealing and have to make sense of all of these things. But to wrap this episode up and feel as though no matter what decision you've made, all of these characters are interacting in really compelling and believable ways. It's just kind of like, it's just kind of a marvel. I know every episode we talk about The Walking Dead, it becomes a big old, like, oh God, these games are so good, but they really are fantastic. I mean, this one in particular, again, is just easily one of the best.
Yeah. So it leaves it now. I kind of thought, I had the sense at a certain point that maybe Carver, maybe the culmination of this season would be something about
Carver. Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought maybe, he's the, you know, he's the big bad of this season, to borrow Buffy terminology. Yeah.
But now, so, like, we have two more episodes, and we're kind of out of this, you know, we're out of Carverville or whatever, and now, you know, what are you looking for in the next episodes?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Well, the next episode is chasing after fucking Sarah.
Yeah.
We can just leave her in the woods.
Escort missions, am I right?
I'm looking forward to putting her out of her misery. No, you know, I think a lot of this whole season, you know, this episode was a lot about, I thought it was a lot about gender and masculinity, but that ties again to the sense of family. And the first episode was about family, and the second episode was about family.
Yeah.
So I think that really the culmination, the thing that I'm most looking forward to, is having to sort out what will ultimately come of Clementine, Kenny, and this particular group. Right? Next episode, dealing with the fallout of Kenny's wife.
Right.
You know, we chopped her arm off. Yeah. If she survives, man, I don't know. That's a rough position to be.
Yeah.
I think I almost feel like the best or most interesting place for this to go is Clementine leaving everybody.
You know? Like, I was thinking about that too.
I just feel like when she's around, the fact that she's seen as a child, and this is true from the very first scene of this season, or one of the first scenes at least, when she's with God, what is her name from last season?
Sarah and
no,
Krista and Omid.
Yeah, Krista and Omid. When she's with Krista, and Krista has lost the daughter,
yeah,
right, and you get this sense that with Clementine around, Krista thinks about the daughter that she doesn't have. Yeah. And that creates tension. And I feel like that has sort of been the theme of all these three episodes so far, is people see Clementine as something that she cannot be. Yeah. She just can't be what she has to be for everybody. And sometimes that means she can't be the hero, you know, and she can't be the little girl, and she can't be the daughter. And in my mind, like, I think the thing that's coming to a head is the decision she has to make to basically just leave everybody and say, I've got to figure out who I am because you are projecting too much right. upon me.
Yeah. Whew. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But,
knowing what we know from the first season, like, shit is going to hit the fan, man. Yeah. Like, two more episodes.
Yeah.
In the end of the first, end of the fourth episode of season one, Lee gets bitten.
Yeah.
Like, that was crazy. Yeah. So something is going to come to a head, right? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we'll leave it there for now. I mean, again, always like extra deep episodes for these things, and we'll obviously be doing it again in a couple months when the next one comes out.
Yeah, hopefully sooner. It's so long.
To wait. But at this point, it's like, well, this took a long time, but clearly there was a reason, and you know.
Yeah.
If it's gonna be this good going forward, like, take your time, whatever.
Take your time.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address if you want to reach out.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. We're hosted by Lowe's department store.
Not House. That's a zombie apocalypse waiting to happen.
Yeah. Come by, let us know your thoughts on this episode, how this whole season is going, and what you think the future of The Walking Dead has in store.
All right. Until next time, we'll be talking to you next week.
Ciao. Every time we disagree.